Roundtable Osteuropa. Ein Podcast des Zentrums für Osteuropa und internationale Studien.
Welcome to a new episode of our podcast, Roundtable Eastern Europe. You probably remember the images of long queues of cars at the border of Russia with Georgia, 10,000 of Russians leaving the country in 2022 after Vladimir Putin had announced a partial mobilization. Thousands had already left in the month after the start of the full-scale invasion against Ukraine, especially pro-democracy activists, journalists, people critical of the regime, because the repressions were then stepped up even more. Georgia and Armenia were among the most popular immediate destinations for those Russian migrants. And today we want to zoom in on this topic, the relation of those new migrants from Russia and the societies in Georgia and Armenia, because those two countries and former Soviet republics have rather complex relations with Russia, each in their own way. My two guests today are Margarita Zavadskaya. She's a senior research fellow at the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. And we are very glad to have you here. Hello, Margarita.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
And my second guest, it's Tsipilma Darieva. She is the head of the research cluster Migration and Diversity here at Zeus, and she has done research on Russian migrant activists in the South Caucasus.
Thank you very much.
I'm Stefanie Orfal. I'm heading the communications team here at Zeus, and I'm going to be your host today. Let me start with a question on why so many of those who left Russia in 2022 and after go to Georgia and Armenia.
Indeed, it's a very remarkable wave of immigration from Russia to quite unusual destinations, as the societies actually are characterized by out-migration, not in-migration. They are characterized by economic and political instability, which is not that attractive for, let's say, normal migrant. But actually, there was not much choice where to immigrate. The opportunity to plan the immigration at that time in February, March 2022. And the situation for many was quite urgent, and the issue of possibility to enter a country visa-free, and Georgia and Armenia belong to these countries, which have a relatively liberal migration regime for not only for Russian citizens, but a variety of countries. So you can enter the country and reside there for at least for 1 year. So many Russians who have not any Schengen visa, they opted for these countries, such Georgia, Armenia, Turkey, but also Israel, and the most interesting one, Central Asian countries. So the second point that Georgia at that time was considered particularly by those who were engaged and political activities was considered as a safe haven for many of that, because Georgia at that time was characterized by more for pro-democratic and pro-European development. So that reason maybe was also attractive for those who decided to leave the countries and for those who were working in international companies. That's true that a significant number of migrants returned to Russia, in particular among those who decided to leave Russia in September 2022 after the call for partial mobilization. And estimates say that about half of those 100,000 in Georgia returned back to Russia, but a lot of them also have chosen the third country.
Mm-hmm. So if I can just add a little bit on the reasons why these two countries were one of the most favorites. So it obviously does not contradict what Tsipilma just covered in detail. But apart from a visa entry and geographical proximity, well, of course, it's familiarity and culture. So Georgia and Armenia were traditionally popular among Russians for tourism and have significant Russian-speaking communities. Before the full-scale invasion, Georgia, with its mild climate, wine, and renowned hospitality, Genatsvale, had a reputation among young liberal Russians as a freer, vibrant place compared to home. So it was a combination of usual tourists plus the more politically, I would say, active Russians who are journalists, NGO activists, who actually were looking at Georgia as a free haven with a very local, vibrant civil society. Armenia, for its part, has historically been seen by Russians as a friendly post-Soviet ally by both pro-Putin, anti-Putin, sort of like apolitical Russians, with deep cultural ties and a large Armenian diaspora in Russia fostering people-to-people connection. If we look at the Armenian case, according to my rough estimates based on my fieldwork and survey data and interviews we've done, almost one quarter of all the people we've talked to are basically Armenian ethnics who used to live in Russia. So there is a huge overlap between Armenians who basically had exactly the same experience as the Russian nationals. So there is a lot of overlap. If I say that these communities are kind of the same, to a large extent, I would probably make a big mistake. But in coastal Georgia, of course, after the Russia's occupation back in 2008, many ties, personal family ties, were severed, and including Russian migration regulations back in Russia after 2008, many Georgian, including labor migrants and family members, they had to go back because it was almost impossible to obtain residence permits in Russia. Therefore, after like more than about 15, almost 2 decades of this dramatic conflict, there was very little understanding.
Thank you. We can look at the political context a little bit more in a minute. Let us start, Tsipima, with the experiences of the Russians who came to Georgia. So after what we have heard about the expectations that people had, what kind of landings did Russians have there? And generally, how did Georgians react to them?
I would also emphasize that actually the migration, or let's say movements between Russia and Georgia, they were not that new. A high number of Russian tourists visited Georgia regularly. But at that time, in February and March 2022, there was an unexpected mass migration from younger people. And it was a sort of surprise for the Georgian society, which haven't used for any immigration in their country. And if you ask, was it generally a reaction of the local population? It was quite ambiguous. It was ambiguous, and the arrival of at least 10,000 of young Russian men and women has generally raised fear, threat, uncertainty, and the Georgian society, which actually unprepared to deal with this flow of migrants, and they were never perceived themselves as a country of migration destination. So immediately there were cautious attitude towards newcomers, and what was also visible in the city landscape, the negative attitude toward newcomers in Tbilisi was conveyed in really very, very different areas of everyday lives. There were examples of graffitis in the city in English, also in Russian language, saying that like something like very critical, saying Russia kills or you are not welcome. And one of the important historical and political factor played in this negative attitude, which was already mentioned by Margarita, is the traumatic memories of the Russian-Georgian war in August 2008, when Georgia actually lost control over its sovereign territories in Abkhazia and in South Ossetia, and with arrival of so many Russian citizens. These memories of invasion and lose control over their territories somehow became vivid, and what one of the reasons why the communication between newcomers and the receiving countries became very difficult. So these ambivalent relations between newcomers and the receiving country, you can see in maybe on the level of everyday communication, but at the same time, you can see that the economic relations between Russia and Georgia are flourishing to some extent. This was one of the also argumentation from the side of Georgian government and the ruling party Georgian Dream, saying that actually the arrival of Russian migrants would have a positive effect on the Georgian society. And indeed, a lot of economic and finance arrived in the Georgian society, and that's all that the result of it became that the lari became very, very strong. But on the level of everyday life, in particular among young people and Georgian middle class, there was a very cautious attitude towards newcomers. And within our project, we started in 2022 on understanding the impact of political migration and the political opportunities for migrants in this country like Georgia. We have done some research based on qualitative interviews and based also on social media research. And one interesting field what we have closer and more deeper at the relationship between the Georgian receiving society and the newcomers in a specific field like housing market. And there we have revealed specific strategies the population tried to develop to, let's say, to resist the influx of Russian migrants that time. Let's say I can say a few words more about the results of this research, which I conducted together with Georgian anthropologist and assistant here in Germany, and it published. But one interesting result is that of economic impact on the receiving society is a high rise of prices for housing market and some apartments which were offered via Airbnb and Booking.com became much more expensive. Two or three times, and the media and the local population were, and all tourists were talking about the unbelievable price hike in city housing market. This was also one of the strategies which was developed by the apartments homeowner in Georgia.
What were these strategies that people developed to deal with this housing market issue, as you just described?
We have looked at communication in social media between homeowners in Tbilisi and reveal four different strategies which were used and practiced in the period between March 2022 and approximately November, December 2022. We call it practicing of informal sanctions. Informal sanctions were introduced by the local population in response to the state government policy, which actually rejected to join the economic sanctions introduced by Western countries, and the Georgian government has retained from this policy. And the local population, or the, let's say urban population, in particular those who belong to middle-class society and young people, they have decided to develop their own rules and own ideas how to resist that. So they have revealed four different strategies, or in some extent you can also say tactics, and we define them as rejecting the newcomers, rejecting clients. The second was discomforting clients. It means that you still rent your apartment out, but you try to make clients not that comfortable as before. The fourth form of strategy was avoiding the clienting by circulating information that the apartments in Tbilisi are not that well equipped, for instance, with Wi-Fi or other important conditions for renting apartment. And the fourth strategy, which was developed after practicing these other three strategies, is exploiting Russian tenants by raising the price of the apartment. And this actually had a negative effect for the local, own local population, those who were not able to pay for the high prices of apartments. Overall, this actually contributed to the next level of gentrification of Tbilisi, and poor citizens, in particular those who were students in Tbilisi, they really were impacted by these strategies that they lost their apartments, and some of them have to find their other places to live.
Margarita, we've heard about Georgia. Can you give us an idea about Armenia? From one of the surveys that was done by Zeus, I remember a picture of a group that were rather young, political, also well-educated, but financially not so well-equipped. Does that sound about right? And how did they find their place in Armenia?
According to our own study, we basically agree on what choice field work also found out. Indeed, so the majority of the newcomers in Armenia are younger, more educated. There is somewhat disproportionate share of IT specialists. On the other hand, yes, indeed, so they are less well off in terms of economic means and their capacity, ability to sustain themselves. In that sense, I wouldn't say that Armenian group actually was dramatically different from the ones who landed in Georgia and elsewhere else. So actually, there is a remarkable uniformity in socioeconomic profile of Russian migrants. Of course, those who actually were able to repatriate elsewhere, Israel or Germany, so their pathway differs from those who are in South Caucasus, and obviously those who applied for political asylums in the European countries or United States, they also differ in their profile compared to those people we're talking about. In terms of how Armenian society, Armenian government welcomed Russian newcomers, so in general, the reception was markedly warmer on the whole compared to Georgia. We also did some field work in Georgia, and back in 2023-2022, I could feel the difference. Another important aspect, many Russian migrants were sort of commuting between Armenia and Georgia, so there was a lot of exchange. Some people who, for instance, were denied re-entry to Georgia, and those who unfortunately didn't have Schengen visas, they decided to move to Armenia, for example, with more lenient migration regulations and border controls. Many Armenians view Russians traditional allies, so when they felt kind of sympathy, especially before the Nagorno-Karabakh / Artsakh, if we use Armenian terminology for that. On the other hand, it also wasn't kind of entirely free from friction, so to speak. So very similar processes were observed in Yerevan when it comes to housing costs. They skyrocketed as much as in Tbilisi. Apartment prices in the center were reported to have jumped by an average of 270 euros, which is 100,000 dirhams. It's Armenian local currency. This is the price per square meter back in 2022, and these numbers are extremely unrealistic and unfeasible for the local population. This sparked some frustration among Armenians searching for more affordable housing. And there were also some cultural adjustments because Russian language signs and businesses proliferated in parts of Yerevan, and Russian newcomers often stuck together in their own cafes and co-working spaces, forming a semi-enclave economy, so to speak, or a parallel world coexisting with the residents of Yerevan. Unlike in Georgia, however, there was little open hostility. And if there were any signs of that, they were mostly in Armenian language that is barely accessible to the majority of newcomers, unless they are also ethnic Armenians. Although many of these people also are in the process of learning and relearning Armenian language. And on the contrary, according to our interviews, because Armenian language world was not visible, accessible to Russian nationals, to Russian migrants, they argue that many locals helped them to settle in. For example, Armenian IT companies and national firms actively hired Russian tech talent, integrating them into the workforce. Armenian daycares, municipal daycares, are somewhat popular among Russian migrants as well, although many preferred, again, to create parallel daycare system to the existing one that also caused some discontent from the local population. But as I said, there are very few cases of open aggression, not to say graffitis, or I would say discrimination based on rental prices. So the overall prices skyrocket for everyone. And it also overlaps with some other processes that are not related directly with the influx of Russians, which means that also there are diasporic Armenians who come and go to Armenia, and they also affect and drive consumption inside Armenia. And this is kind of another difference between Georgia and Armenia in this context. So bottom line, to make a long story short, is that the average price in Yerevan are already kind of high, and they used to be higher compared to Tbilisi. And the Russian influx of Russians made the situation worse in this respect. So it was better for business, but worse for the average Armenian population.
Just to, would like also to add to what Margarita mentioned regarding the economic inequality between newcomers and the local societies also in Georgia. We really have these big differences and disparities actually in economic incomes. And according to surveys and studies made by colleagues like Gulyashova, new migrants really can mobilize resources somehow remotely, but the average monthly income of them was about $2,300, contrary to the monthly income of $550 per household in Tbilisi. So we see here huge differences. And this all have been manifested in, let's say, Russian superior consumption, and the purchasing power of Russian clients was much more higher than the local population.
That's to jump in on that. So yes, an Armenian resentment on economic grounds remain limited compared to Georgia, if you want to draw some parallels, and was partly because the country, Armenia, desperately needed an economic stimulus. So there were some economic expectations from the Pashinyan, Nikol Pashinyan's government, compared to Georgian government that was back then, I would say, not terribly pro-Russian, and it's a very serious understatement, compared to the current government, Georgian troop, that is very pro-Russian. And it changed the political climate in Georgia quite dramatically. So Armenia desperately needed an economic stimulus after years of stagnation and its own war with Azerbaijan. And in short, Georgian felt more economically squeezed by their rivals, whereas Armenians saw more net economic benefits, softening public attitudes. But it's not to say that there were no frictions. So, I mean, we could still observe by talking to also did interviews with Armenian nonprofits and Armenian researchers. And obviously, it's not free from friction, but compared to Georgia, of course, it's largely very hospitable.
It was remarkable to see how friendly actually the Armenian colleagues were towards a Russian new component in their own society. But there are some parallels, similarities between Georgia and Armenia in regard to learning local language by Russian migrants. In both countries, we can observe the same attitude towards the local languages, only very, very few. And as far as I remember, according to OutRush study, only 1% of the migrants living in Georgia or Armenia learn local languages. And there is very low prestige of Armenian or Georgians for Russian. Instead of that, they study more English, Spanish, for instance, in Georgia, because Georgia is, maybe it's differently to Armenia, but Georgia remained a transit land for Russian migrants, and many of them seek the way how to remigrate to a third country. But still, I was surprised now, a week ago in Tbilisi, that still a significant number of Russians stay in Georgia and started to be integrated into, at least in the local economy.
This topic of languages and also the economic imbalance, that brings me to the deeper reasons for these attitudes towards Russia and Russians that you already touched upon. Of course, the political reasons with Georgia, the war, the economic reasons. Are there also historic and political roots in the recent or older history that you see as a source for these reaction to Russia and Russians? And also maybe to bring that already in, because you also said that the political climate has changed, especially in Georgia, that there is this complexity that people and governments in this country also do not always see eye to eye in their relation to Russia. What is the official stance of the governments and their policy towards Russia, and how the people or the society sees that?
I will start with Armenia, because I think it's somewhat easy case, and Georgia definitely deserves more discussion, and I leave it to Tsipilma. Well, Armenia's official stance is kind of ambiguous, because there is a lot of discussion inside the country, but this discussion is largely silenced due to the dangerous proximity of Russia, and also connections with and uneasy neighbors for Armenia as a country. And on top of that, it's also quite far away from the European Union. And despite the large groups of the educated middle-class Armenians who are leaning towards the West and European integration, unfortunately, the current circumstances do not really make Armenia that attractive and that easily incorporated or befriended by the European Union and other partners compared to Georgia or Moldova, for example. So it's a very kind of lone fighter, so to speak, or small and not, I would say, it's a country with a relatively weak state capacity vis-a-vis Russia and its neighbors. So it makes situation very, very ambiguous, especially when it comes to Russian civil society being hosted by Armenia that can't really protect them, although so far it has been doing it relatively successfully. But anyway, so when it comes to official stance, Armenia has been a close ally of Russia, given the CSTO membership. So, and this way, this was still true in early 2022. Armenia abstained or voted with Russia in international forums regarding Ukraine. So it basically supported Russia and its aggression against Ukraine and never imposed sanctions on Moscow, which again, so made Armenia, alongside Kazakhstan and some other countries of Central Asia, attractive both for pro-government Russians and anti-government Russians, because they actually thereby they received access to banking services and SWIFT system that was basically effectively cut off for those inside the countries. So the Armenian government, led by Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan, maintained that Armenia needed to keep Russia on site, given Russian peacekeepers were at the time the governors of Nagorno-Karabakh, Armenian population and Russian troops guard Armenia's borders with Turkey and Iran. As a result, these things changed afterwards, after the Russia's withdrawal from the conflict and basically absence of any moderating, mediating capacity in the Azerbaijani-Armenian conflict that made Armenian population, together with Armenian government, quite anti-Russian. So when, in late 2023, Armenia basically pulled out on some planned CSTO military exercises, and Pashinyan's wife even delivered aid to Ukraine, which is a symbolic move signaling distance from Russia. So the same was reflected in Armenian public opinion polls, which means that it also partially reflected upon people's attitudes towards Russian migrants. Although we still do not really observe, at least based on my recent field work this August, that we still do not really observe any changes on the ground, how these newcomers are being treated. Despite this shift, though, Armenia has not severed ties with Russia as a state, so Russian troops and a large Russian military base remain in Armenia. To remind our audience, so when Russia is still seen as important for Armenia's security and economy, Russian gas, for example, powers Armenia. Thus, the official stance as of 2024-25 is still in flux, so still formally allied with Russia, but growing more critical. For Russian migrants in Armenia, this evolving stance hasn't yet turned the government against them in any way, but they're still able to live and work freely. But if Armenia continues to pivot west, it might gradually tighten oversight of Russians on its soil. For example, Armenia recently started discussions on visa requirements for some countries, though none for Russians yet. But the very opening of this conversation might pave the way for further regulations of this kind of gray zone. Not very regulated or, I would say, registered in commerce and movements back and forth between Armenia and Russia. Because so far, Russians can travel on their domestic passports, which makes exchanges of people extremely flexible. But on the other hand, it becomes like some kind of a gray zone activity, so to speak.
That's super interesting. And Sipemai, you already said informal sanctions. That gives us the idea that there's a contrast to the actual sanctions or missing sanctions or actions of the government. But what's the official stance in Georgia?
We really observe unpredictable change in the policy and politics in the Georgian society. And this, since November last year, we see the demonstration and protests on Rustaveli Street. And we know that since maybe 1.5 years, we observe political change in this country, geopolitical shift from, let's say, pro-European development pathway towards authoritarian rule and more maybe multi-vectoral politics, what Georgia tried now to establish. There is a long discussion about whether Georgia is now pro-Russian. I think it's a topic for more deeper investigations, and I'm not as sure that we can really say about that. This may be one side explanations, but we observe significant changes towards, let's say, EU policy. in Georgia. And I think 2 weeks ago, the Prime Minister of Georgia has announced that the policy for pro-European development and joining the European Union in Georgia will be postponed at least to 2030. And as a reaction of the population was a huge demonstration against that. So the geopolitical shifts in the countries means that the Georgian government tries to pacify their own population and try to do that with quite unpopular means by introducing severe laws in, for instance, for demonstration, public demonstrations and persecution of those who participated at this demonstration. One is important change, what we have to mention here, the introduction of the law on transparency of foreign influence, which was introduced in May 2024, and that resulted in a huge content and public protest in Georgia. So it means that all non-governmental organizations have to be transparent and have to be controlled, in particular regarding their finance and their networking. It also, to some extent, impacts Russian civic initiatives and other non-governmental organizations run by Russians. So all this leads us to a situation that we should observe what is happening. And the situation is quite difficult also for Russian migrants there, because we see that the political situation doesn't provide much space for participating in political issues of the local society. And many Russian newcomers refrain from any participation in politics of Georgia. There were some ideas, initiatives to support the demonstrations in Georgia, but many migrant societies and activists decided to refrain for that, because the law now is restricted, and in particular towards the foreigners who participate in the demonstration, they can be sanctioned and can be also deported. There were also some cases. So that means that the political situation for visible public expression of your attitudes towards Russia, for instance, not really possible nowadays in this country. And on top of it, we still have a precarious legal status for migrants, and all these lead to the situation that many Russian migrants disengaged with their political ideas and initiatives, and somehow stay in their echo chambers and their small communities in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. The effect of this environment, I think in research we call it the receiving society, the effect this has or the impact this has on migrants, and maybe especially with a look on a group that I think you have both been studying, of activists, of people who are politically active, Russians who are abroad and have been active in their lives in Russia or even later on when after they migrated. How does this environment they find themselves in Georgia and in Armenia, how does that affect their activism? And what is the perspective for the future? How do people envision their future? Will they stay in the country? Will they move on? Or are they not sure about that yet? Margarita, would you like to start?
Yeah, I'll try to keep it very concise because we have so much material and probably Tsipulma can also challenge. I'll try to narrow it down to Armenia because the impact on people's activism and their life strategies, it does vary a lot depending on receiving societies, their political landscape and political opportunity structures. So to sort of keep things relatively simple, because already talking about Georgia and Armenia, we see that it's a real conundrum when it comes to government level and societal level orientation, that these orientations changes in receiving societies and receiving countries. Makes our analysis complicated, and it obviously does impact the modes and survival strategies of Russian activists. So in Armenia, direct political activism, such as protests or advocacy by Russian emigres, has been much more muted given the pro-Russian orientation of the environment, first of all, the government. Again, when I say pro-Russian, it doesn't mean that Nikol Pashinyan and his government, they love Russia. It's a forced and sometimes reluctant alliance. So far, it's also survival strategy of Armenia as a state, and not as this particular government, probably. So to be kind of more respectful to the nuance of the Armenian domestic politics. But given this environment, the risks for Russian activists are also quite obvious. So you won't see Russians marching in Yerevan with anti-Putin placards. That would have been very sensitive until recently, even after, I would say, like collective Armenian disappointment with Russia as a guarantor of peace with Azerbaijan still. So we see very limited public manifestations of political outcry, although it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. For instance, many Russian nonprofits and anti-war, anti-Putin activists, they teamed up with the local Armenian initiatives. When I say local, I mean like Armenian. So to be more precise, they teamed up with initiatives supporting Artsakh refugees, for example, refugees from Nagorno-Karabakh. And this sort of also served as another reason of a deeper integration of Russian activists, Russian civil society actors with Armenian civil society. And also it was kind of a pragmatic reasoning, obviously, a way to show and demonstrate that these people are reliable and can be trusted by the Armenian civil society. And according to my observations, because I observed like the aftermath of this huge large-scale campaigns, funding campaign for crowdfunding campaigns, that this movement was sincere and it was like broadly shared in terms of values and in terms of empathy towards the those who were escaping the war. Also, Russian migrants Armenia engaged in civic initiatives and humanitarian activism not related with purely political/civic cause, but mostly related with environmental activities. This is something that unites Russian activists with similar initiatives in Tbilisi, in Batumi, in Georgia in general. So there is a lot of exchange between activists living in Tbilisi and Armenia. It's 4 hours drive. There is a lot of exchange between activists in Tbilisi and Yerevan because this is just a 4 hours drive by car. If there are no queues on the border, which makes these connections relatively easy. Apart from this humanitarian solidarity, there is a very peculiar way how Russian civil society still manifests its political stance. It's, for example, layering flowers to Ukrainian monuments in Yerevan, for example. It's another way of showing solidarity with Ukraine, although, again, as I said, attitudes towards Ukraine as a state and Ukrainians, refugees in Yerevan in Armenia was very peculiar. Mm-hmm. Given the fact that Ukraine has been historically supporting Azerbaijan in Armenian-Azerbaijani conflict. But as I said, after 2023, it served as a pivotal point in Armenian attitudes towards Ukraine as a state and Ukrainians in general, which, again, made these actions of solidarity, I wouldn't say more visible, but facilitated, so to speak, this kind of cooperation. But in general, given the rise of transnational repression and the instances when Russian activists are being prosecuted on Armenian soil and sent back, there are not too many cases like that. But unfortunately, they do have a serious chilling effect on Russian activists in Armenia, which further, unfortunately, serves to the purpose of demobilization of Russian activists, both in Georgia, but for the reasons that Tsipilma outlined very nicely in her response, but also for the reasons that Armenia, unfortunately, Armenian state still has very close ties to the Russian state. And unfortunately, it can extradite Russian activists back. But recently, we learned that one of the Russian escapees, unfortunately, got killed in Armenia.
In addition to that, if you look at Georgian situation, there was much expectation that political activists who migrated to Georgia in 2022 would find a place to continue with their activism and demonstrate their attitudes. And indeed, there was a high number of a variety of initiatives in the field of establishing a new political community in Georgia, for instance, led by Free Russia Foundation in Georgia, who wanted to somehow to create a new community of knowledge of policy and those who could be somehow impact the situation in Russia from abroad. And other initiatives were like a humanitarian aid to Ukrainian refugees, or also in the field of environmental issues mentioned already by Margarita. Or there were some small nice initiatives, for instance, for helping pets and cats, and also mutual support insight of the Russian community is quite remarkable. For instance, in this, in questions of psychological support and exchange of experiences to create life hacks, how to survive in the country. And visible political manifestations, they are not anymore to observe in Georgia. The last visible manifestation was in December 2023, organized by Free Russia Foundations. And after that, they themselves decided not to pursue this form of activism. There are many different factors that play a role in this situation. There are external and internal factors that should be considered. There were good conditions to continue with their activism, in particular because of the existing experiences or existing social capital, to some extent also financial capital, to continue with Kremlin critical positioning and with the idea to impact the local population in Russia. But it's not enough. You also have consider also external factors. External factors, I mean, for instance, support of international organizations or support from the side of the receiving society. I mean, the level of social or political integration into the society where you reside. And in that sense, Georgia became a kind of non-audience, which I call in my study for Russian activists. In comparison, for instance, for other more democratic countries and those countries who are, let's say, used for migrants like Germany or other European countries, there is situations is different. There is more communication, more support, and more mutual activities between newcomers and local civil societies. This you cannot observe in Georgia. There is a mutual distancing due to different reasons. And I think that if you have no support from the side of receiving societies, it is an important factor that leads to disengagement among Russian migrants or whatever migrants. Some kind of anti-Russian attitudes does play role in that sense. But I have to say at the same time, Russian people living in Georgia, they are not that much interested also in to integration into the local society. There are some cultural problems. I already mentioned language. But I think it should be changed because according to observation in other countries and other migrants groups, and in particular among activists, support from the side of the country where you reside does matter. It brings additional resource, it brings additional networking, and it brings also the possibility to be recognized as a politically active person.
Thank you, Zipfelmeier, and thank you both so much for answering this large question or for being so concise. I know that for you, we sometimes only have scratched the surface, but for some of the points we touched upon that we can link materials and other publications on our show notes. So all of you will be interested in Margarita's research and Zipfelmeier's research. Go ahead and have a look in the show notes. Thank you both very much for joining us today. And also thank you for listening. Hear you next time on Roundtable Osteuropa.